2013. I'm Eddie Middleton in Memphis, and co-hosting up in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, is Justin Abner, and I'm going to let him introduce our two outstanding guests tonight.
All right. Good evening, and glad to be here. Our guests this week are Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner, who co-authored the book, The Alien Abduction Files. This book tells the most startling human alien contact stories ever reported, and raises the question, why should we take abduction cases seriously? Kathleen Martin is an author and lecturer with over 23 years of experience, a prominent alien abduction researcher, and the director of MUFON's abduction research. Denise Stoner is Florida MUFON Assistant Director of Alien Abduction Studies, a paranormal investigator, and is a practicing hypnotist specializing in regressive hypnosis. So welcome, ladies.
Thanks.
Hello.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, I've got to say I've been reading your book, and I'm so impressed. I realized once I got into reading this book, this is something one should study. It's not just an interesting book to read. It's a lot of very valuable information about the abduction phenomenon, and I have to congratulate you two and commend you very highly, in fact, for this work based
Thank
on all
you.
The solid research you've done. And I have to say it struck me as very meticulous and following all the careful scientific protocols. A very, very good book to introduce someone, even the skeptic, to the UFO abduction phenomenon.
I feel that it would be a great book for any field investigator with MUFON who is going to be engaging in abduction investigations, because it gives a lot of information about what it's all about, what the experience is about, and what to look for.
Well, you've covered, it seems like, the whole nine yards on the, at least touching on everything, aspect of the phenomenon that scientists should be wanting to further explore, and even bringing in the objections of the debunkers and dealing with those, giving them a fair hearing on the possibilities that maybe they occasionally might have a point worth, you know, entertaining and considering it as an alternate explanation. I think that was a good feature of the book, letting the debunkers have some say and dealing seriously with their objections.
Yes, they're right about a number of things, and all of this does pertain in some cases. So I've done the research. I know what their claims are. I know what the research is that supports their claims, oftentimes the academic research. So I like to work together with the debunkers or the skeptics in order to really do a very good case and not just a wide-eyed, believing kind of attitude.
Right. Of course, the two of you have done an independent research project on the commonalities of abductees that is now available. I think, is it available on the MUFON website somewhere?
It's available on my website at Kathleen-Marden, MARDEN.com. Is it on yours too, Denise?
No, it's not, and the reason that I didn't is because we're already working on a second study, and because of my experience and continuing experiences, Kathleen has very cleverly kept some of the information from me. I've, of course, read the first one, but since we're working on a second one, and I've turned in questions that I have already to her for review, I don't want them to cause me to have that effect, what we might be working on with me again. a second time around because we have new things going on. And so I'm going to answer my own questions in the second study, turn it into her immediately, and I think we're also going to ask anybody that answered the second group of questions to turn them into her also so that I am not affected by those answers.
Yeah, of course, I thought about the Roper report. How accurate do you think that is in giving us some estimate of the percentage of people who've actually been abducted?
Well, I can tell you that two of the questions that were on that Roper poll happen to almost anyone. Waking up paralyzed with a sense of a strange presence of a person in the room, that's very typical of sleep paralysis, which is a fairly common experience. Most people have that at least once in their lives. The feeling of a sensation of flying, well, you know, a lot of people dream about that. Balls of light in the room, no, that's a different. That's something that is pretty common among experiencers. Finding puzzling scars. Well, there's a higher rate of that among experiencers than there is among the general population. But the general population does find some, you know, scars, and they wonder what happened. So I think that the results are probably a little bit skewed here. But Bud Hopkins was much more conservative than Roper, because Roper said that it was indicated that as many as 3.7 million Americans were abductees. Bud Hopkins said that it suggested to him that it was more like 560,000 adult Americans who might be abductees. That's still
a huge
number. I'm not sure that it is that large. But I can tell you that hundreds of people have contacted me looking for support primarily. So we're working on that, trying to form support groups around the country where people can come together and just tell their story to people who are not going to criticize them. And it's a really good way to work out the trauma and the fear and to come to a sense of understanding. So I'm working on that with Starborn support. But Denise has a support group, and people are forming these around the United States to really help experiencers.
Yes, and I actually just joined Starborn support. So it's going to be several groups around the country under that guise that can be available to assist people. And we can also tell those that come in that may be having something else going on, it's okay. You know, tell us what's happening, but I think that you might be free of that abductee scenario because now you've heard the others and you can see the difference between what's going on with you and what's going on with them and let them loose of that binding that they feel. It's just something that if you were a scientist and beginning a new research, you keep asking more and more questions and where do I go now and what do I look at now and how do I continue the research, what tests can I run. It's all the same thing. We just need more people to see that.
By the way, my co-host Justin Abner is quite likely an abductee himself, and he's also practice hypnosis. I'm sure he'll have questions for you here.
Oh, okay.
In fact, he's getting ready to move to Laramie, Wyoming, and he's going to be consulting with Leo Sprinkle on a regular basis. They've developed a real rapport on the phone. We interviewed Leo Sprinkle here about a month ago. It was a great one-hour show. And so he's really pursuing answers himself to his own experiences with these alien beings, and I'm sure Justin's got some questions he'll have here. Of course, the show he wants to put to you. One thing I wanted to mention, you talk about people being traumatized and getting some help, coping with that through regressive hypnosis and maybe going to these support groups. I remember David Jacobs told me once that when someone comes to him for regressive hypnosis to find out if they've been abducted and what went on, he always tells them that if they're doing okay, coping with life, and they maybe better leave it alone. And I think he used the analogy, opening a can of worms, and you're not advised to pursue the knowledge of this, of what happened to you, if this is causing some pretty severe disturbances in your life. And could you comment on that?
Well, I definitely agree with that, and I'm going to ask Denise to comment after me. But yes, I do not think that hypnosis should be number one priority on everyone's list. I would put support groups way ahead of that. Most people do have some memory of their experiences, and over time, they remember more and more. And so what I encourage people to do is when they have an experience, to journal it immediately, to look for physical evidence on their bodies, such as patterned bruises, and to photograph those, to put them on a chart of the human body, to measure them, to know exactly what they look like, and to look for fluorescence on their skin using a UV light. Go into a dark room with that light, and if you see fluorescence, photograph it without a flash. So there are a number of things that people can do to help them remember this, because if you don't document it, you're likely to forget it within a couple of days. That's just the way this whole thing works. So it's best to write it down immediately, and then you'll know what happened. You can take that information to your support group, which is really just self-help. It's people getting together anonymously. No one has to tell their name. What happens in that room stays in that room. Only experiencers and their supportive spouses are permitted to attend. There is no media allowed in that room. And so that's the way it works, and I really think that that is the best route for experiencers. How about you, Denise?
Well, I'm going to state that people have asked me, why you? Why did you get chosen for hypnosis? What's the difference between you and someone else? And that's pretty easy, because I had mostly conscious memory. I had worked also with a Dr. Romack in Colorado, who has passed away. He had recorded some information for me regarding my abductions, and those were lost when he passed away. There was no one left in his family that I could retrieve that information. All of that had become fuzzy and puzzle pieces misplaced and out of order. So regarding that, Kathleen was there only to put those pieces back in the correct places where I had conscious memory, and to get them back where I needed them, in a definite order, and not to recall my memory completely, because that was already there.
Something else I did with Denise is anything that would be troubling to her, she was given permission to forget, that she didn't have to remember those things. And that was really important in protecting her so that she wouldn't become frightened or more traumatized. So there
is
a reason
that's
for
true.
Amnesia.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And there are some of the things that we have gone through, not very many, that my memory is a little bit foggy. I don't remember it as anything big. If I do recall it, I would have to have it probably mentioned. It's like it's way off in the distance now, and it's real comfortable to be with.
You know, at the time you had that experience out in Colorado, you and your husband had almost 3 hours missing time.
Over 3 hours, yes.
Missing 40 miles of road, and the mm-hmm. rest of the odometer. and they were at the point of calling the highway patrol. They were extremely concerned maybe there'd been an accident. At the time, did you think of the possibility of an alien abduction? Or were you at all familiar with that subject at the time?
Oh, I was familiar with it because I was only a child when this whole thing began. But at that time, I had, I guess, put it in its own little separate box in my mind, and I thought, okay, I'm an adult now, I'm married, I don't have to go through this anymore, we have our own family, and that light over the car that's now lifting it off the road, that just can't be that. It's not happening again. Until the whole episode was over with, and I think in my mind I knew it was happening, and now my family was involved, but I was having difficulty bringing that forward until I actually saw my friend and the person I had been working with, and we found out, oh yes, it's happening.
Yeah. And of course, most people just could not even begin to compute that this is real. I know some of my colleagues in the teaching here in the junior college, the English professor, one in particular comes to mind, he just thinks it's a laughable subject. And when I run into him, he'll sometimes, you know, poke fun at me a little bit about it, and then I just kind of say, yeah, I know, it's just kind of far out stuff I deal with, you know. Up my ears and weird with my radio show. And, but I can see that there's no way his mind is prepared to even dare to think maybe this is real. You know, it's like he's totally brainwashed somehow to ridicule or, you know, deny that this is possible at all. You know, and this is true. I have so many people in the mass population, I think, and of course I think we thank our own media a lot for that. You know, through the Air Force, plan to debunk the subject. You know, but do you think all this is changing? Where people are starting to wake up more now and start to put this as possibly a real and a worthy of serious scientific investigation?
Well, I think that we are conditioned. Many, many people are conditioned to be highly skeptical about this. That, you know, trace it back to Project Grudge and way back in, what was that, the late 40s, early 50s, where the decision was made that this should not be made public, although the government knew, the military certainly knew about this. Project Grudge was in 1949, and, you know, that was before Blue Book, and then Blue Book came as a result of it. But in the book, I wrote a chapter on the history of government involvement, the studies. It's titled Anything But Extraterrestrial, and that was sort of the attitude toward it. And the government in 1955 did Project Blue Book Special Report Number 14, where they evaluated 3,201 cases and on a multi-level scale. Was it a balloon? Was it astronomical? Was it aircraft, miscellaneous, psychological, insufficient information, or unknown? This was done by the very prestigious Battelle Memorial Institute, and there was a team that had to evaluate every one of these cases that came before it. And in the end, 21.5 of these cases were in the unknown category, meaning that after very careful and extensive evaluation, they could not be placed in any of other category. And 31.1% of the excellent cases were unknown. So this was really compelling information, yet Donald Qualls, the Secretary of the Air Force, said that no UFOs have overflown the United States, and even the unknown 3%, not 21.5%, 3% could have been explained. So, you know, the cover-up was there. It's continuing. I find it really troubling that a lot of the new movies are presenting horror stories about alien visitation. It's terrible. There's a tremendous amount of misinformation out there, and it is of huge concern to me. I would really like to see the public being educated in a good way about this instead of being scared out of their wits or having it presented as a science fiction story that they can easily deny.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that there are... Sorry.
Go ahead.
So my question then, do you not believe that there aren't any, horror stories of abductions out there?
Well, sure. I hear some very unpleasant cases and people who have been injured, people mm-hmm. who have, you know, particularly the stories that you hear about reptilian and military intervention, and a lot of that is being reported out west. I don't hear much of it here on the East Coast. I hear, you know, occasional
mm-hmm.
reports. But, you know, that is frightening. The grays, of course, that's frightening. And if they're doing these medical experiments on people, it's unethical, the idea that they are abducting people without asking, without having permission, is a crime. That sort of thing. But, what are we going to do about it? Should we make everybody terrified, or should we make people laugh at it and think that it's ridiculous?
I don't think so. Go ahead, Eddie.
I was going to say about the disclosure movement, which we know Stephen Bassett's efforts for that, or in their recent Citizens UFO hearing in Washington, the National Press Club. And by the way, I hear the media didn't cover that much at all. And what's this? An article in the recent New York Journal about that. But that's mm-hmm. the question I was asking when I interviewed him, and also Bryce Zabel. His book, I think he, Swartz was his name, the co-author with him. But he seemed to think that people would be willing to, look at that and not be terrified, something they could deal with. I just wondered, if they're going to have disclosure, people. I mean, what John Lear said was, if you start disclosing, like officially, like through the government, getting on TV and stating this is really happening, they're going to want to know the bottom line. He said, then they're going to have to disclose all about what they know about abductions. Do you think that people, the general population, would be ready to get to be told in no uncertain terms that this is really going on? People are really being abducted in the manner that you talk about in your book. And, of course, a lot of it is very frightening. What do you think about that? If this is something they can be educated to not be too terror-stricken over and willing to try to deal with this in some way that would be beneficial to humanity? Or I'm rambling a bit here, but I'll let you answer in some way you want to.
Why don't you take that first, Denise, and then I will.
Okay. Because our answers may be slightly different, only because mine is coming from a different place. It comes because very, very recently it may be something that was released in me that I've been told as an abductee. I don't know. I have a very strong feeling that as abductees, we are going to be the ones to disclose. Our government is not going to do it, no matter how we beg, borrow, plead, that we are being prepared to do the disclosure. And how it will be accepted is going to be in a variety of ways, of course, because of the belief systems and coping mechanisms that individuals have. So there's still going to be those that are going to stick their heads in the sand, and they're going to debunk, and they're not going to believe. But it's getting very close, I feel, to us being the ones to stand up and say, you're going to have to take it because it's coming. They're going to show themselves.
And to add to that, I do have the sense that it's going to be the experiencers themselves who disclose this information in very large groups. And it has to be done very carefully. I think that it would be a good idea for the government to prepare the people for this, and for Hollywood to prepare the people by presenting the information accurately instead of as a horror story where people are killed, children are stolen and never returned, you know, that sort of thing.
Encounters of the Fourth Kind, you know, that, which is very loosely based on reality, but it was portrayed as the real stories of these people, and it's horrifying if all that was going down the way they you know, portrayed in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know Bud Hopkins wrote a great article blasting that in the MUFON Journal. I need to find a copy of that. You know what I'm referring to, I think. You know, so many people that believed in the, of course, UFOs and the abductions thought that that was the real story, and they were totally taken in by it. And I think that is very unethical, what they did, just to make
money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, the government is going to have to admit that the military is powerless, that they can't, you know, people have been abducted for many, many years, and that they could not intervene. You know, some people, conspiracy theorists, believe that the government actually gave permission for the ETs to do this in exchange for technology. And Laura
mm-hmm.
Eisenhower has been stating that. And so that would be kind of an insidious plot, in a sense. But I think that it can be presented and in a positive light, and that we can move forward
mm-hmm.
into the future as a world that recognizes an intelligent presence beyond ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. You know, Kathleen is the niece of Betty Hill, and she knows, I'm sure, a lot more about the Betty Bonnie Hill case than other people who think they know. Of course, she wrote, co-author of the book with Sam Franklin as her consultant, captured the Betty and Barney Hill story. That may have been construed as a beneficent interaction, right?
It might have been. Excuse me, I didn't hear you.
I mean, I've heard people talk like, and I've taken Casey Frankovich, who knew Betty real well, they were good friends, and she was talking like they had a real, like, providential care for her, concerned about her when her health got real bad. Could you maybe comment on that?
Yes, because I took care of Betty, and K.T. Frankovich would call and speak with Betty when she was well enough to talk on the phone, and then KT and I would speak together. But it does appear that there might have been some intervention by the ETs in Betty's life toward the end of her life. There were a couple of experiences where, and let me tell you about them. Betty's daughter was taking care of her for a couple of weeks, and I was back home with my husband, but I would go over to Betty's in the morning, and I would stay for the entire day. And she and Betty and her daughter would always be up and dressed, and the house would be opened up by the time I arrived at 8. But on one particular day, they were in their night clothes. The house was still closed up except for the back door, and the deadbolt was out. I walked in, and they said, "Something weird happened here last night." And they always woke up early. Betty, at that point, was paralyzed. Her legs were paralyzed. She was not able to walk, and one of her arms was paralyzed. She had only one good arm. She had fallen, and she had fractured her arm. And so she had a flexible cast on it. When she woke up in the morning, that flexible cast was about 12 feet away with an ACE bandage neatly folded on a chair. It would have been impossible for Betty to have done that. My first thought was, "Well, Connie, do you sleepwalk? Did you do this?" That was Betty's daughter. And Connie said, "No, she had slept through the night. She hadn't done it." The very strange thing was when they woke up, the back door to the house was wide open. And even stranger than that, Betty's cat, who was her constant companion, always beside her, became terrified of Betty. She wouldn't go within 10 feet of Betty for an entire week. And I was documenting this in a journal. We also saw an improvement in Betty's health. Her eyes had become sort of glazed over. They were suddenly clear and sparkling again. Her pallor had been gray. She was it was suddenly rosy again. She felt better for about 2 weeks. We thought that a miracle might have been performed and that she might recover. But in the end, she declined and ended up dying about 3 months later. But it was quite remarkable. And another time, my husband and I were staying upstairs in Betty's house. I had a baby monitor so that if she needed me, she could reach me at any time of night. And we had just gone to bed, and we were awake, and we heard Betty. Well, first of all, I heard this very strange, almost a buzzing kind of sound, but it wasn't. I can't even describe it. I don't consciously remember ever hearing that sound before. And Betty suddenly said, "My God, what are you doing here? I never thought I'd see you again," which was very, very strange. And it always made me wonder if there were ETs down in the room. I really wanted to get up and go down and take a peek, but I'll tell you, I was shaking. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just seemed to fall off to sleep, and that was it.
Hmm.
Justin, you got a comment, a question?
Oh, yes, yes. I was going to comment earlier about you guys are saying about contactees and abductees being the ones making the disclosure movement more prominent, and I agree with that because as my main focus when I deal with abductees, even myself, you know, okay, I've been abducted, and now what? What does that mean? Now, where do I go from here? Do I just constantly relive these stories? Do I constantly retell these stories? We need to understand that we experience these things for a reason. And the reason could very well be to, as you've mentioned, inform the masses and then help us focus our minds to, I guess, one would say it from a metaphysical sense, elevate our consciousness to a higher level. To me, what that tells me in a more realistic, more mundane sense is getting us to start focusing on a more global scale to function as a single unit, to realize that there's more life outside of us and start trying to connect and be part of the universe instead of just being so focused on this mundane nonsense around us.
Very well
stated.
Would
you agree?
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely, too. It's we're not here any longer just to focus on our selfish little spot on the earth, because obviously the earth is falling apart. And I think that as abductees, we're finding out and being told that if we don't do something to preserve the oasis that they come to get what they need that they can't from other sources out in the universe, it's going to affect many places and galaxies other than just here.
Exactly. And from what I understand, from my own experiences, that the human race were originally created to be caretakers of this planet, and we've done nothing but ravage and destroy it, taking more than what we need, and the idea of greed and power just overwhelmed us. And I can see how conspiracy theorists would say that we have sided with reptilians and worked hand-in-hand with them to keep the masses enslaved, because the reptilians' agenda is to keep us, their source of food, their source of experimentations, whatever, you know, organs, yada, yada, yada with the grays. They want to keep us closed so we can't evolve to be aware of them, so we can actually, you know, get rid of that nuisance upon our species. What was I saying?
Well, people on Earth are so busy trying to survive due to economy, due to this, due to that, that they are now beginning to lack empathy and sympathy for other fellow human beings. And is this how some of that evolved in these other entities? I don't know. But having been a scuba diver and having been a person that I love to go fossil hunting and I love to do all these different things, and to watch some of these things die off and watch human beings destroy the coral reefs. And then when you ask them, do you realize what you just did? You were just instructed not to do this and that and the next thing. For instance, underwater, putting your hands all over the reefs. Don't touch them. Float and look. Don't touch. And they look at you like you're crazy. They don't understand that they've destroyed something that will never come back. And the taking only pictures and don't leave with anything in your pockets from our national parks and from historic sites. They don't get that any longer either. It's, well, I'll take it all. Nobody will miss it.
And we've had this mentality of using the earth, of feeling that we are the dominant species and that we can control everything, dominate everything on the earth, and really misuse it by polluting it the way that we have, by through planned obsolescence of using our minerals, of using our natural resources, and making it so out of control and so controlled by what a lot of people will call the power elite, or the major corporations whose primary purpose is not to care for this planet, but to increase their wealth, that they have bought up patents that might have been used for alternative energy sources. And, and you know, that's just an example of what has happened to people on Earth, and you know, we all need to be re-educated to care for our planet as well. And you know, from my knowledge, pretty extensive knowledge of the Grays agenda, at least they're very concerned about a possible environmental disaster or collapse here on Earth, and are attempting to move us ahead, to help us out, because, you know, perhaps they have a selfish motive too. Perhaps they're using our resources, but there is also concern for the survival of the human race.
Yeah. So, in a sense, they could be considered our friends? Mike, could you actually say that? If you talk about aliens, friends or foes, you know, dichotomy, would they be the category of friends and not foes? I know that was the theme of the last MUFON symposium, the question.
Mm-hmm.
I lectured at that, and it's really difficult, you know, with that dichotomy of friend or foe. But it does appear, at least for some of our visitors, that they are attempting to move us ahead so that we can enter the cosmic kindergarten, so that we can be part of all of this. And, you know, the concern is that if we're not careful, our behavior could lead to the disintegration of our species. And they're very concerned about that from many, many people have been told.
Yeah, of course that's
exactly.
We've been hearing that message from a long time ago, starting with the contactees of the 50s. And that's been an ongoing theme, the message they have for us, it seems, that we're destroying the planet. Honoring, you know, our ecosystems. And the Grays, they seem like a new arrival on the scene from my perspective. I know back in the 50s we weren't hearing much about the Grays. It was the contactees of the tall, blonde, blue-eyed Venusians and all, but then the Grays become prevalent. Where did they just suddenly come from somewhere, or have they been here all along and just hadn't been noticed so much? But I know that back when I was growing up, I never heard anything about the Grays or saw any depictions of them. And now that face, you know, with the large, you know, head and the black eyes, and that's in the public consciousness everywhere, you know.
Yes, it is. And, you know, you have to go back to when this became prevalent. Well, let's think about when they took Betty and Barney. They were pretty interested still in studying the structure of the human body. It seems to compare the differences between themselves and us. And so from their treatment of the hills, I suspect that they were fairly new here. Now, I don't know if it was just a new group or if they had been here earlier and had then come back again. You know, I can't answer that question, but it does seem that from the way that Betty and Barney were treated, and others, I've talked to people who actually had family members in New Hampshire who were taken before Betty and Barney and who never, ever told their story. And a family member is now telling me about this. So, you know, people started to be taken right around the late 50s, early 60s, it seems.
Well, I hear a lot of chatter from a lot of people in a lot of different circles, some were contactees and such, and they said right around the 50s is right around the time when the U.S. kind of agreed and kind of coerced with the these alien beings to allow abductions and stuff like that. So I don't know if there's really a correlation there or not, but it is said that that's how that came about.
Right. You know, when you think about the Eisenhower administration and those dates, it does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It makes you... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Because especially because that goes back to the Nazi UFO conspiracy and them getting a lot of their war machines from alien technology and stuff that they were developing. I've heard some contactees talk about that. Do you have any say on that?
Well, I have had several abductees that did not mention the Nazi portion of it, but when they were abducted, they ended up being involved with some involvement or sighting of military individuals along with an alien,
mm-hmm.
and they could not connect any trading off of individuals. They just saw both together. And that is such a separate issue from what I have chosen to work with that it would be a whole new study to delve into. You'd almost have to have someone that was willing to work with that section and the my labs involved compared to what I'm doing, compared to what Kathleen's doing, that there just isn't enough time to take up both, I don't think. Kathleen, what do you think?
I agree. Denise and I are highly specialized in what we do. We're not generalists at all. And so, and I think that that's the case. You have to choose an area of research and really delve into that particular area if you want to gain an understanding of it. So I really can't speak to Nazi involvement.
Right. Yeah, we're going to get back to the subject of your book here shortly, because this focuses on the abduction phenomena. And, of course, we're approaching the top of the hour here pretty soon before we raise more questions. But yeah, I'd like, first off, to have you give out contact information for our listening audience, how they can order your book, The Alien Abduction Files, and your website addresses they would like to check. Would you give that out for our listeners now?
Sure, we'd love to. Well, first of all, the book is available on Amazon. It's called The Alien Abduction Files, The Most Startling Cases of Human-Alien Contact Ever Reported. And you can get it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It is also available in Kindle and e-books. And if you would like to get an autographed copy, you can go to my website at Kathleen, with a K, dash Marden, MARDEN.com. And Denise, why don't you give yours?
Mm-hmm. Yes, my site is Denise, M as in Margaret, Stoner.com.
That's easy to remember. Maybe they ought to give it out again in case they just got their pencil out, you know. So, would you give that website one more time, Denise?
Yes, mine is Denise, M as in Margaret, Stoner.com.
Okay. So the book just was published. How recently was this?
It was released on May 20th, so it's brand new.
Brand new. And I think it's going to have a tremendous impact. From what I'm getting from reading the book, I'm finding it very instructive, all kinds of interesting information on the abduction phenomena that's not readily available in one book. I know David Jacobs did some great pioneer work in one of his books, The Alien, what was the title of that book, you know, where he gave the whole a structure of the typical abduction episode. I forget the,
He did Secret Life and then...
Secret Life.
Was that it?
Yeah, but I think that you have done even more than in laying out the whole anatomy of this phenomenon here in this book. I mean, and there's so many things that we could talk about on this radio show pertaining to that. And I want to give out caller number two, so we have people who would like to ask questions or make comments. You can call us here at 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. And sometimes we have people call in who are abductees that want to ask questions of maybe that they have a kind of a crisis going on even currently, and you might want to call in. And we have a chat room. They might want to, you know, just send us an email for our chat room. And Justin is checking on that, too. So
okay.
Usually we wait till after the second part of the show to start taking call-ins, but I'm going ahead to give out the call-in number now if people want to get their call Freddie when they come back from the break.
Okay,
I think we're pretty. Yeah, Justin, go ahead. What were you saying?
Just real quick with that guest call number, that 347-838-9142. Be sure you press 1 so you are showing up in the host queue that I know you want to speak with the host or the guest.
Okay. Why don't we just go ahead and take our little break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll take calls then. And I have a lot of questions I want to ask myself, and I'm sure Justin does. So let's go ahead and take our break. About what is it, about a two-minute break, Justin?
It's about 3.5 minutes. And so
okay,
we'll
that's like on Coast to Coast. You got a 3.5 minute commercial break, man. Isn't that great?
Okay.
Somebody might need to go to the restroom or get a coffee or something, you know. So we're going to go ahead and take a little break for about 3.5 minutes. Okay, great.
All right.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Ari Pierce of the RBR Network. I would like to take a moment of your time to tell you about our other fine shows in RBR. Starting every Monday, we have Cosmic Contact with Pam Drennan at 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join Pam with her wide variety of guests, from astrologers, psychics, mediums, to different types of healing modalities. Next is A Searcher's Roadmap with Keith Blanchard at 8 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Keith focuses on the spiritual, ascension, UFOs, metaphysics, and so much more. Join him for a spiritual journey. On Tuesday, we have the I Am Well Show with Anamika at 7 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, live from the Netherlands. Join her as she speaks with alternative medicine practitioners and healers all over the world. You are going to be surprised when you hear modalities that you never heard before, from Europe to Asia to the Native American nations in the United States. A show you don't want to miss. On Wednesday, it's the No Show with Reverend Robert McMillan at 7 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Enjoy the different perspectives from religion to spiritualism with a twist of psychology. This is a very interesting show that we are sure you will enjoy. After the No Show, tune in for the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program with James Renford Powell at 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join James on this 54-week personal development program. It connects the 13 universal principles with a business perspective. This is an amazing show that can and will change your life. Thursday, join Daryl Clark on the Progressive News Weekly at 5:30 to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Hear the news that the media is not telling you. It's a great show with a lot of interesting guests. Friday night, join Jeff Pierce and myself for the Spirit Walker Show at 6 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. This show covers anything and everything under the sun: spiritualism, paranormal, the unexplained, conspiracy theories, UFOs, and much, much more. Saturday night, tune in for Night Search with Eddie Middleton and Justin Abner at 6 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Night Search focuses on UFOs, alien abductees, and the unexplained. Tune in for a wild 2 hours. Thank you for listening, and enjoy your show.
Okay, we're back with Night Search, and I'm Eddie Middleton in Memphis, Tennessee, and Justin Abner up in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. That's, you know, the territory of Dollywood is located in. And we're interviewing Kathleen Martin, Denise Stoner, who co-authored this great new book called The Alien Abduction Files, which is, believe me, a real education on the subject, and it's highly recommended, even for skeptics, to make ought to read it and comment on it, you know, honestly, and try to open their minds a little bit. So, welcome back to the show, and I've got some specific questions myself. First off, though, see if we got any call-ins yet, Justin. If we do, we'll take a call in now.
We have no call-ins right at the moment.
Okay. Actually, believe it or not, 90% of our listeners hear the show in the archives, like, because this goes into archives immediately after the show and stays there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
But that doesn't mean we don't have a lot of people listening right now that are too timid to call in. You know.
That happens.
We will hear from some after the show. That happens quite a bit. But one thing I wanted to ask about, since I know that really the two of you are experts on this subject, having done in-depth research for years, and gosh, how many years have you been involved with it, Kathleen? It's like, what, 15 years or more?
No, 23 years now from the time that I first started investigating my aunt's case. I joined MUFON in 1991. So quite a long time. And, of course, I've had an interest in it since I was 13 years old when
right.
Betty and Barney had their experience.
And you've been director of abduction research for MUFON now for, what, at least 2 years? Is it going on 3 years?
Yeah, I think it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, and, of course, a lot of cases come under your purview, and I'm sure you're learning a lot more about the phenomenon because of your connection with MUFON there and doing research projects that original that you and Denise collaborating on.
Yes, the research projects have brought more people to us. They were coming to me anyway because I'm Betty Hill's niece. When I lived in New Hampshire, people knew about me and the work that I was doing. I was actually doing lectures at a high school on the history of abduction, of alien abduction and that sort of thing. So people were coming to me back then. That's how I met Jenny Henderson, whose story is told in the Alien Abduction Files. But it has picked up since Denise and I asked people to come forward and participate in our study. So, you know, when only 50 people participated in it, but we had probably 6 times as many who came and just wanted to talk to us about their experiences. Wouldn't you say that, Denise?
Oh, yes, at least, yes. And now since our book and radio conversations, I'm having trouble keeping up with the email because there are so many that say you came out and now you're talking and telling your story and I need to say something about mine. Could you tell me, do you think that something happened to me? And I'm finding that very, very fascinating because they do need help. They need someone to talk to.
Mm-hmm. What would you say would be your first piece of advice for someone who thinks they may have been abducted?
Well, contact someone. File a report with one of the organizations and say, I'm filing it because I believe I might have been abducted. Some individuals start out with saying they've had a UFO sighting when they really want to talk about abduction. Look for a support group and state that fact. I'm looking for a support group. And if there's one in your area, by all means, go to a meeting. Start right off saying that and then say, I really need to keep this confidential. I need to keep it quiet, but I need to talk to someone. And you can let anybody that you go to see know that up front. because I realize what someone goes through when they start to open up. And then you find a reliable individual to talk to, and you just start to mention the things that you're thinking about, the dreams, any missing time, anything that you've seen or heard or been through.